Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu. This is Focus 580, and it's the second hour of our program. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge, and we're pleased to have you listening. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Dale, and Henry Frain, is at the controls. At colleges and universities all across the country, administrators have made a deliberate effort to promote racial and ethnic diversity on their campuses. And they have made the argument that doing this will benefit students. It will benefit in the classroom, and it will benefit them in their life outside of the classroom. Here this morning, in this part of the show, we'll take up this question of diversity and whether it really matters and whether you can demonstrate the fact that it matters. And our guest for this hour is Denise Green. She is an assistant professor of educational psychology at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and was involved during the time that she was actually here at the University of Illinois in a project looking at this very issue. That is, does it make a difference in how they do in class and in all aspects of campus life? Does diversity, setting that as a value and a goal, does that really make a difference for students? She will be back here in Champaign-Urbana for a conference. This will be taking place on April 21st, and it's titled Documenting the Differences Racial and Ethnic Diversity Makes, taking place here on the U of I campus at the Levis Center. And we thought it'd be interesting to take a little time to talk about this very subject here this morning in advance of the event. And questions, of course, are welcome. People who are listening are certainly welcome to call in with questions and comments. And the only thing that we ask of callers is that people just try to be brief. And we ask that so that we can keep the program moving, get in as many different callers as possible. But anyone listening is welcome to call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, if you're going to call in, use the local number. That's 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you use that number and calls on us. That is 800-222-9455. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL or 9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Professor Green, hello.
Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Doing well.
Good. I appreciate you giving us some of your time. Maybe you might talk just a little bit about how it is that this particular study here at the University of Illinois that you were involved with, and you'll be discussing, and people will be discussing when this conference takes place, how this came to be in the first place. How did it get started?
Well, actually, the impetus for it is the U.S. Supreme Court decisions in 2003, the Gratz and Grutter decisions relating to affirmative action. And as many people across the country know, the Supreme Court affirmed that race can be used as a factor in admissions because the understanding is that racial and ethnic diversity, as well as other types of diversity, are very important for our college environments and important for educational excellence. And so, based on that foundation, this particular study, which is funded by the Ford Foundation, was initiated in 2004 at the University of Illinois. And the main purpose of the study is, as you indicated earlier, to document the differences that diversity makes. And we're speaking of not only diversity in terms of the number of students who are racially and ethnically diverse on campus, but also looking at other factors, examining how they interact with one another, looking at diversity within the classroom context, looking at diversity in terms of the campus culture, campus climate. And so that's a pretty tall order. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, We launched this project in 2004, and it is a collaborative effort. It's not only myself, although I'm the lead principal investigator on it, but there are a host of other faculty who are involved with this project that really makes it work. And so the purpose is for our campus conference that we're holding next week, the purpose of that conference is to disseminate the information and some of the findings that we've come across thus far in doing this study. And it will come to an end this summer.
You know, I think that there would be some people, people in higher education who'd be prepared to argue that these kinds of values that we're talking about, having cultural, ethnic diversity on campus, in the student body, in the faculty, just makes sense in the sense that if what we believe education and higher education particularly is about,
right,
is exposing people to new and different ideas and new and different points of view, that then diversity would seem to go hand in hand with that idea that we also want to have that kind of mix of people and ideas and views and backgrounds on the campus as well to facilitate that kind of dialogue. That would just, in a way, that just seems to make sense. But having said that, though, it sounds as if maybe until fairly recently, the evidence to support that was anecdotal. Maybe we felt in our hearts that was true, but that we didn't really have hard data so that we could point to this, say, well, not only do we feel that that's true, but it really is true, and we can show you that it's true.
Right, and in part, that's why I believe the Supreme Court was able to affirm that diversity is an important value, because the University of Michigan, along with other institutions, were able to bring forth in various documents evidence to show that diversity does indeed make a difference on these college campuses. And so each institution really needs to do its own audit of how diversity manifests itself in various contexts on campus. And that is what this particular project is about, to examine process-oriented questions related to diversity, not only in terms of numerical, how many students of color should we have within, let's say, a college or within certain classes. The existence of a diverse student population is important just as much as diverse faculty, administrators, and staff. But also, after we all are on a campus, then what happens? Then we need to interact with one another. There needs to be discussion. There needs to be dialogues that takes place. And because of the project that I'm working on, what we've done is examine and look at aspects of diversity within the classroom, looking at the program, for example, of intergroup relations, and also examining students' behaviors and their attitudes about diversity.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we could talk a little bit about the experience in the classroom. I think, again, people in education and in higher education particularly would make this argument that says the learning that goes on in the classroom, it's not just something that happens between the teacher and the students as a group. They don't just learn from the teacher. That ideally what happens in the classroom is also they learn from each other. And they learn that as a result of getting to know one another, classroom discussion, the kinds of questions people ask, the way that hopefully in a positive and respectful way they challenge each other. You know, if you think somebody else is wrong, it's your opportunity to say, well, you know, I think you're wrong about that, and here's why, and for that to lead to a kind of real meaningful discussion. Maybe that doesn't always happen in classrooms, but that's kind of the ideal. Can one really say that having a class, having a group of people that is more diverse makes that experience better, more meaningful, and that in terms of the educational outcome, that's something that you can actually measure?
Well, I would say yes, number one. And measure can be defined in various ways. Of course, students' attitudes can be measured through survey instruments, but they can also be measured through collecting qualitative data and understanding their thought processes and how they begin to think about diversity and whether their ideas about diversity are changing as a result of the classroom experience. And so, for example, one of the project partners involved with this Ford Foundation project is the program on intergroup relations. And that program has been on University of Illinois campus for quite some time. And its involvement with documenting the differences diversity makes is very critical, because in examining students' evaluations of the course, we're beginning to uncover that students are very much in tune and comfortable with being in a classroom environment where it is safe to discuss these issues around race and ethnicity and racism and looking at cross-cultural ideas and examining stereotypes. But this type of program has a particular type of structure. You have to set ground rules, as you mentioned earlier, David, assuming the classroom is a safe space. Mm-hmm. The classroom must be safe for everyone, for students of color, as well as white students, as well as the instructor. And the instructor is there to facilitate this dialogue between peers and between the instructor and the students in order for them to explore of their own cultural backgrounds and to also understand the perspective of the other, the perspective of other groups. And in being able to understand the perspective of other groups, it cannot help but enhance a student's learning and being able to think more critically about certain issues, even to the point of motivating them to be more involved in issues of social justice. Mm.
This, it strikes me now that this is a significant challenge for teachers. The kind of doing the kind of facilitating that you're talking about, again, this is kind of an ideal, maybe something we want to aspire to. Doing that kind of facilitating is not easy.
It's not.
It is not easy.
It doesn't come naturally. And conflict will occur in these type of courses, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with competing arguments. There's nothing wrong with discussing different arguments and different values and competing values. We can't step away from that. We have to engage in that type of dialogue. If we plan to get beyond just being in the same space and not knowing one another, in order to get to know one another and get past these holding on to stereotypes that prevent us from truly engaging in an intellectual discussion and moving beyond in our thinking and thinking more critically about the world, especially given that we're becoming more and more a global society. We can't just live and think within the realm of our own group. Mm-hmm. We have to think about how other cultures live, understand how other cultures live, so that we can communicate across cultures.
So you feel that based on what students say about their classroom experience, beyond the questions about how much did I learn in this course and will it benefit me in the future and in my future, what I want to do with my career and all that kind of stuff, if you try to ask questions that get at their attitudes and their interaction with their fellow students and how the experience of the course has helped them get a better understanding of the larger world, then you can say that in fact, yeah, as a result of there is a benefit. Okay, yeah, I'm taking a long time to ask a straightforward question. Yes, they will say that they did get that, and you can say yes, that is a benefit.
Yes. Yes, definitely. But that's not the only way that diversity manifests itself. There's another component of this program, this research project that I'm involved in, and that's the intersections component, a living learning community. And intersections is relatively new. It's in its second year. And the main emphasis around intersections is to bring students together in order to improve race relations using intergroup dialogue, using scholarship, bringing in scholars to speak to the students, using research, using the arts, and social action. And so diversity isn't limited to just the classroom. Diversity also manifests itself within the way, within the living spaces of the university community. And so Intersections, being one of those living learning communities, focuses on bringing students together to discuss some of those hard issues. But the nice thing about it is that a number of those programs are organized by students. And so they initiate the dialogue and the discussion. And sure, there's conflict that arises from time to time because we don't learn how to do this naturally. But the university has a great opportunity to aid students who come to their universities, and the University of Illinois is one of them that is actually setting the trend for putting together this type of living learning communities. There are many living learning communities across the country, but not many of them focus on the issue of diversity and improving race relations. And so I feel that we're very fortunate to have Intersections involved with this project because we get a chance to see and examine how students live together with one another, because you can't just assume that the interactions will take place. And so having a structured program of this nature aids in facilitating those benefits of diversity. As I said, it's not just simply outcomes, it's also the process.
I have a caller I want to bring into the conversation, and let's do that here in Champaign. Someone in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Great topic. I'm glad to hear about it. I think I have to take a little difference with the approach that you're talking about, and maybe there's more to it than we've heard so far, but you've been really talking about making space safe for debate and understanding the other and talking about our differences and understanding the other cultures. And it seems to me that this approach encourages separateness, not togetherness. Discussion doesn't really solve problems. You had kind of alluded to the idea that one of the big steps is not just to talk about this, but to get to know other people. Here's my assertion. Mm-hmm. Togetherness comes from working together to accomplish shared goals. You can't assume that interactions will happen on their own, and especially when we're talking about people with different cultures. I agree with that completely. And that means it seems like we need to use the university environment as a way to begin the process of creating opportunities to work on tasks or projects or situations that require cooperation, that require trust, that require the idea that if we are successful, we are all successful. If we fail, every individual fails. In other words, when I look at both school and the world of work, greater society, we create togetherness by working on shared tasks, on shared goals, accomplishing things together. Talking about it only emphasizes our differences. working together and learning about each other, experiencing each other, breaking down stereotypes happens only when we actually roll up our sleeves and do a task, do a job, accomplish a goal of some kind. It's the working together that really makes a difference. And from my experience in university, there was not a lot of classes where really the goal was to work with other people. It all came down to you're out there for your grade. Now, some classes, it was a competitive nature where if I get a good grade, you're going to get a bad grade. Some classes, it was we have independent standards, and if I help everyone else do great, everyone can do well. But either way, it was mostly geared toward the individual. And I would assert that if we create situations in the classroom and in the general university environment that force people to work together, a lot of your goals will be met. And I'll be happy to ring off and listen to your comments. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. What do you think about that?
Well, actually, I don't disagree with the caller at all. I believe that can go hand in hand with what I'm proposing, because working together, working on one goal, one particular task, of course, provides a way of facilitating individuals to work together. And if it's a common goal, a common objective that people are working towards, that certainly can help facilitate understanding across cultures and so forth. But at the same time, we can't necessarily assume that that will always take place when people are working towards one particular task. And because we are looking at these various environments, we're gleaning from them the various lessons learned that can help us make sure to facilitate these various working groups, as the caller proposed, to make sure that the safe space is available, to make sure that people are open to sharing their thoughts with one another, to make sure that various worldviews, how people look at the world and how the world operates, that their ideas are not shut down because there's a dominant worldview that's being used to run the course of the team and how it operates. And so I believe it can go hand in hand. You can have one with the other. It doesn't preclude the other.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Denise Green. She is Assistant Professor of Educational Psychology at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and was, before going there to Nebraska, here at University of Illinois, where she got involved in a project, a two-year project, taking a look at the potential value of racial and ethnic diversity on a college campus, looking specifically at this one, this college campus. It's a project that was sponsored by the University's Center for Democracy, Center on Democracy in a Multiracial Society, with some funding from the Ford Foundation. And she will be back here next week, and there will be some discussion about this project and what it is they learned, and if it's possible to document the differences racial and ethnic diversity makes. This will be happening next Friday, the 21st, here on the U of I campus. Questions here on this particular subject, of course, are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think one of this, again, I think maybe it touches on what some of the issues the last caller brought up. I think one of the things we know about college is that the things you learn about life, some of the most important things for good or ill, don't happen in the classroom. They happen outside.
Right.
And again, here, I guess the part of the value of trying to work toward this kind of diversity means that it's possible for students to have all kinds of interactions have that not just happen in the classroom. But it strikes me that isn't always easy. The students have to be together in the classroom, and then maybe you can set up situations where people have to work together on projects for class.
Right.
Then the question is, what do you do outside of the classroom to counter what might be people's natural tendency to hang together with other people that are like them and not do so much mixing and interacting?
Well, people gravitating to their own group, that's very natural. And that's not necessarily something that that we're saying works against diversity per se. But truly, if an institution values diversity, I would recommend that from the top down and the bottom up, the value of diversity would be implemented and seen in many different contexts beyond just the classroom. And so, for example, when you think about diversity, it shouldn't be isolated to pockets of different initiatives and programs on campus. The University of Illinois is a very large Research One institution, and it's very decentralized. So you can have an initiative that's very successful, that's thriving within one college, that doesn't impact another college or area of the university. And so there really needs to be a concerted effort to look at diversity from an institution-wide level and examine it in a way to underscore how can we help facilitate environments that are both within the classroom and outside of the classroom so that not only students but faculty too and also administrators can begin to interact more with one another to discuss climate issues related to race and ethnicity, to discuss the culture of the university. Does the culture of the university truly embrace diversity in its many forms, one of them being race and ethnicity? Of course, that's not the only type of diversity that is valued, but that's the focus of this particular conference because it stems from the affirmative action cases, and we're just carrying that through. But you have to look at the leadership. You have to examine the leadership and how the leadership is supporting efforts of diversity and making sure those efforts speak to one another, talk to one another, collaborate with one another, and at the same time maintain an arm of a particular office, I mean, that assesses what has been going on in the campus environment, and not just simply counting how many students are there, but understanding how can we retain our students of color, retain our faculty of color, facilitate an environment where everyone feels that it's a place that welcomes people from all different walks of life.
Let's talk with another caller here. We have someone on cell phone here, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm wondering, to what extent does the success of sports fields, basketball, football teams, lead us in terms of understanding how to make this multiculturalism work? It seems to me like they're a decade ahead of things that go on in classrooms and research labs. Or is it, in fact, such an isolated thing on a campus that it doesn't seem to make very much difference when you have a multiracial, multicultural sports effort?
I'm not quite sure what you're getting at here. Could you elaborate a little bit more?
Yeah, there was, at one time, there was a lot of resistance, both in professional sports and in university campuses, to having players other than white on teams, and there were segregated teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time now that that has passed. We now have very successfully integrated sports teams on our mm-hmm. campuses.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that, in one sense, they have already traveled the road you're trying to travel in the classroom. They figured out how to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you're talking to people in the sports arenas and asking them how they did that.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that sports has everything resolved, but certainly the teams do reflect a more of a multiracial composition and reflect more of the demographics of this country and the changing demographics. But at the same time, these institutions are very large. They have many competing interests. And unfortunately, our institutions are somewhat behind when it comes to the area of diversity. During the course of the litigation, from research that I had done, it was very clear that many institutions were just sitting back and waiting to see what would happen in the lawsuits. And even now, when the Supreme Court has decided that race and ethnicity can be considered as a part of admissions, a number of universities across the country have discontinued some of their programs that they had put together to target underrepresented students in order to enhance recruitment and retention. And that's very unfortunate. In some cases, I think we have moved backwards while trying to move forward. We've moved forward a few steps, but we've moved backwards four steps. And so with institutions being fearful of lawsuits and fearful of being considered so race conscious that they're not being inclusive, what we need to do is examine ways that we can include everyone and understand that there are competing interests out there and that universities need to designate diversity as a top value just as much as being fiscally sound. It should be equal. It should be considered equally.
I don't know, did Colin, does that get at your question?
It seems to me like there's a very heavy focus on institutional policy as opposed to social reality and what you're talking about, and that's where your research is, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that it's one thing for institutions to mandate that students of color are represented in the student population. It's another thing to make that work, to really make the mix be as creative as you're hoping. And it does, I'm repeating myself now, it does seem to me that there's probably experience and capacity within the groups that manage the sports on campus to help you understand how they did that 15 years ago in their own programs that would be usable in some of the other programs that you're trying to encourage.
Hmm. Well, I appreciate
it. I don't disagree with you in terms of being able to glean from those other contexts how diversity has worked. And I would agree, the reality is not easy to achieve. Policy, although, is very important to have, and you need both in order to actually realize that. Policy must be in place, certain practices must be in place, and students, faculty, and staff need to have the spaces in order to dialogue and converse and be able to engage each other in order to transform the university in a way to make it more inclusive.
Well, I appreciate the comments of the caller, and also would invite other people who are listening to get involved in the conversation as well. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. I think that something perhaps people who aren't involved in higher education don't realize is that for some time now, particularly at the top-ranked, highly selective colleges and universities, that people in admissions have been making some attempt to build diverse student bodies for a long time. You know,
yeah.
They've been looking at everything that they can learn about potential students, looking at their background, who they are, the experiences that they bring with them to college, and to try to select people out of all of the you know, they have far more people who want to be admitted than can be admitted that they have space for.
And far more people who are actually qualified to attend than who they admit.
Indeed. And so, you know, places like that, they have a lot of very smart kids, talented, with very impressive resumes. You know, so what they're trying to do is to look at those students and to pick and to put together a diverse kind of student body, diverse along all kinds of dimensions. So clearly this is a continuing challenge for the people who work in admissions, the ones who are deciding of all of the people who are well qualified,
right.
Who are we going to say yes, come, you know, who are we going to say yes, come to the campus? And so, but I guess I'm thinking about the fact that this meeting this kind of challenge of diversity and creating this kind of diverse environment, that this goes far beyond the admissions people. And it has to go all the way up to the highest levels of administration of the university. I mean, it's got to involve everybody from the president and the chancellor all the way down. But, you know, having said that, I guess my question would be, you know, say if I was a president of a university or chancellor of a university, I might find myself thinking, well, what is it you want me to do? I mean, in what way can I do things to create the kind of atmosphere on the campus that even if we get the mix of students together that we want,
mm-hmm.
will create the kind of settings for them then to have the chance to have the kind of the interaction that we want? I mean, how exactly, it's a big question ultimately, I suppose, is how exactly do you do this?
Right, and that's the task that's ahead of us, as well as ahead of a lot of institutions. And really, this Ford Foundation project is the beginnings of what you could consider as an institutional audit, diversity audit,
mm-hmm.
To understand what is happening at the University of Illinois campus. And if the president were to ask me what is it he could do, certainly pulling together a team of individuals who can conduct a thorough audit of the institution and lay out a campus-wide diversity plan that would rival the same as one's budget. It wouldn't get put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
But not only having that document is important, being able to support that document with resources, with funding, with individuals who can essentially make it happen. There are a lot of campuses that have pulled together individuals and have written diversity plans, and they just sit on the shelf. And that's the point where a number of campuses fall short. They list many different activities that are going on, but there's nothing to make it cohesive. There's nothing to pull it together, to incorporate it and infuse it into the university's mission. And so this is hard work. This is something that needs to be done, and it can't be done in 1 year. It can't even be done in 2 years. As the earlier caller made reference to, there's policy and then there's reality. And certainly policy is the beginning of that. But the reality is you need people at every level, at the institutional level, at the programming level, and at the cross-campus levels, the MISO level, to buy into the idea that diversity is a value, that it works, that it enhances our environment, our institution, and that it's something that makes us a leader within the higher education community.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Denise Green. She is Assistant Professor of Educational Psychology at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and formerly here at the University of Illinois, was involved in a study looking at the value of racial and ethnic diversity for a college campus, and looking at this campus in particular. She will be here on the campus next week for a conference looking at the results of this study, documenting the differences racial and ethnic diversity make. That's next Friday, the 21st of April. This is sponsored by the University Center on Democracy and a Multiracial Society that was also involved in this project.
And the conference, just to say a few words about mm-hmm. the conference, the way we have the conference scheduled is that we will begin with a discussion of the roadmap for how this study took place. But then afterwards, we will have concurrent sessions to focus on four specific components that are connected to this study. One component is the ethnography of the university. That's an initiative, cross-campus initiative, that critically examines the university with respect to race and ethnicity. And it involves undergraduate students doing research. It's a very exciting program, and they will share their findings in a session. There's also the program on intergroup relations that I had mentioned earlier. That program will also present. We will have intersections. The coordinator for intersections will also be presenting that initiative. And the other session focuses on the Freshman Diversity Project. And this is a project that was administered by Drs. Helen Neville and Lisa Spanderman, and they've done a survey of incoming freshmen looking at their background, their attitudes, their behaviors related to diversity, and they've also done an extensive amount of research on the intersections participants. But along with having UIUC representatives, we will also bring to the conference to speak national scholars. And these scholars will put in perspective for us what is going on across the country with respect to diversity and how other institutions are handling the very same problems, the very same issues, and the very same challenges.
Well, and again, this conference is being sponsored by the Center on Democracy in a Multiracial Society here at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Will take place next Friday, April 21st. I would assume it would be open to anyone who is interested in attending, and you can find out more about it by, I'm sure, going through the University of Illinois webpage. You get to the center, and the information is there.
Yes, and we will be distributing materials that include our findings in short reports along with various other materials that can be useful for anyone who's interested in this topic.
Very good. We have another caller here. Let's talk with him. Line 1, Champaign. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I'm enjoying this discussion. I'd really like to see actual study of the situation, because, you know, a lot of political pundits and so on just like to talk about general ideas and not about specifics. But I had a quick question and a comment. One was, has the study yielded more quantitative results that say, you know, graduates from a more diverse university may become, you know, may be more successful or more effective or that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. The overall study is a design of a case study examining the University of Illinois environment. Uh-huh. But we collected both quantitative and qualitative data. Mm-hmm. And so at the conference, we'll be presenting both qualitative and quantitative data. Some of the quantitative data has shown that students who are engaged in the intersections living learning community are more likely to be interested in issues of social justice, that they're more interested in talking across issues of race and so forth. But it doesn't necessarily, finish that, that they're more interested than students who aren't involved in intersections.
Uh-huh.
So engagement in that type of program does add value. But it doesn't necessarily, having students involved in that type of program, it doesn't necessarily convince them that policies such as affirmative action are good policies to have, per se. So we're still looking at the data. A good number of the results will be shared at the conference.
Well, and one study can't be expected to resolve an issue as complex as that, I'm sure.
Exactly. And as I indicated earlier, we're just scratching the surface here.
Sure.
Because we looked at so many different areas of diversity, it's just the beginning to share aspects of not only outcomes, but the process of diversity and how diversity can change the classroom environment as well as change the campus culture.
I see.
And that's a tall order.
Yes, absolutely. And then the other thing I had that I was kind of wondering on, and I don't know if you've, this probably is a little outside the purview of this particular study, but obviously diversity, affirmative action, things of that nature are highly emotionally charged subjects. And I was just wondering if you've looked at or if there's been talk of approaching it from more of an economic standpoint rather than racial or ethnic standpoint, so that I think it seems that you might be able to obtain the same results through a less politically painful manner, rather than affirmative action being based on race or ethnicity. Be based more on economic background and that kind of thing. So the social class situation might be addressed. I'm having a hard time saying what I'm thinking, but
I think I hear what you're saying, and a number of universities, if not all selective universities, take into account one's socioeconomic status when they're considering admission. And so those particular factors are already taken into account. But one thing that I don't want to get lost here is that one's racial identity or one's ethnic identity certainly makes a difference in how one grows up in this country and the experiences that they have. And those experiences are very valuable and can bring so much to a university environment. And so reducing it to simply one's socioeconomic status, I think might shortchange us in a way that we focus on socioeconomic status to the extent of excluding other individuals who can add much more to our campuses. And it's you raise a very good point. Some people have argued and continue to argue that socioeconomic status really should be the factor that we look at more so than race and ethnicity.
Well, and a lot of people make the argument for affirmative action via general socioeconomic status throughout the country.
Right.
You know, that there are more people of Hispanic origin or African American that are in the lower economic strata, and so that
from a proportional standpoint,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. And so that gives people who maybe their scores don't look real great because they grew up with a school that just wasn't up to standards and so on, that they deserve the chance that everybody else should have, you know, and that would be, I mean, that's a common point that's made in defense of affirmative action.
Right. They do overlap with one another. But at the same time, if you look at the trend at our elite universities, many of our universities are not really accepting students from lower middle or lower income classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why across the country, many institutions, selective institutions, such as Harvard and even the University of Illinois, has initiated programs that provide scholarships for students who don't have the means. They're able to be admitted, but they don't have the financial means
mm-hmm.
to attend. But that doesn't necessarily always overlap with race and ethnicity. And so that's why some experts across the country haven't accept it completely that we should just go by socioeconomic status. Socioeconomic status doesn't cover everyone in that respect. And because our research ones, universities and very selective universities, tend to admit primarily students from the upper income brackets, and that's a whole nother discussion in itself, especially when you take into account our public institutions
mm-hmm.
and wonder about who are they really serving.
We have come to the end of our time, and we're going to have to stop. For people who are here, certainly in and around Champaign-Urbana, and who are interested in further discussion of the subject, you certainly can take advantage of this conference we've mentioned. This takes place next Friday on the U of I campus, documenting the differences racial and ethnic diversity make. And this is sponsored by the Center on Democracy and a Multiracial Society. And our guest here this morning will be participating. Denise Green is Assistant Professor of Educational Psychology at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. Professor Green, thank you very much.
Thank you.